Good morning and welcome to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be starting to learn the book of Yonah. Yonah is often known to us because of its reading on Yom Kippur afternoon, but much more than that, except for the little bit of time that we sometimes hear it and potentially even listen to a shiur on it, we don't know so much about it. Let's try to do a little bit of diligence to appreciate this incredible sefer. The book of Yonah is comprised of four prakim and essentially two nevuos. The first two prakim is one story, the second two prakim are the next story. So the first two parakim deal with Yonah going into the ship and he's being thrown overboard and being swallowed by a large fish and then being spat up. That's the first two parakim. The second two is the second nevuah where he's told to go to Nineveh again. This time he does go to Nineveh and their tshuva process, and finally the story with the kikayon, this tree and this worm that occur at the end. It's an interesting parallelism. We'll see that actually the two nevuahs, Aleph to Beis, parallel Gimel to Dalet in many ways. There's a certain symmetry that the Sefer has in that regard, also to, in terms of Yonah's interaction with the world of nature after his delivery or lack of delivery of the prophecy. Nonetheless, we'll get to the details as we get to the Sefer. Today, we're just going to focus on a brief introduction to the Sefer itself. First basic question is, when did Yonah actually live? He's one of the he's one of the 12 prophets. His full name is Yonah ben Amittai. When did he live? So Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Sukkah, Perek Hey Halacha Aleph, gives a couple, or actually three options. One option is Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Levi Darash, he Darshans, Yonah ben Amittai mi Asher Haya. He came from the tribe of Asher. Why? Because it links to a particular story that occurred in Menachem Aleph Perek Yud Zayin. In this story, there is a widow who lives in the area of Tzarfata, near Sidon, that's up the coast of Israel to the north, where Eliyahu Hanavi goes to visit. There's a widow who lives there, and this lady feeds him and takes care of him, and her son gets deathly ill and dies. Eliyahu resurrects her son, brings him back to life. This is not the story of Elisha, Eliyahu's student, which happens later on, where he also resurrects a woman's child. That's the Isha Shunamit, the woman from Shunem. Here is the woman from Tzarfata. And this woman's child, according to the tradition, is in fact Yonah. Because the area is up the northern coast, that seems to be from the area of Asher, which is why the Gemara actually identifies him with being from Asher. The second opinion in the Gemara is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan himself, who says that Yonah ben Amittai mi Zevulun haya. He came from the tribe of Zevulun. Why? Because it identifies a pasuk in Melachim Beis, Perek Yudalad. It's describing Yeravam ben Yoash, Yeravam II, who was this king of the northern kingdom, who was extremely successful militarily and politically. The borders of Israel had expanded at that time. And this is what the pasuk says. Hu heshiv, this is in Perek Yudalad, in Melachim Beis, Hu heshiv es kuvul Yisrael. He extended the borders of Israel, Minavo Hamas ad Yam Harava. We're talking about from the very north to the south. Kidvar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Asher Diber, Biyad Avdo Yonah ben Amittai Hanavi, Asher Migat HaChefer. As Yonah had said to him in Gat HaChefer. Now, the area of Gat HaChefer is in the tribe of Zevulun, which gives us identification. But you see that he's actually quoted, Yonah ben Amittai, our very prophet, is quoted specifically in Melachim Beis. We'll have to see where this prophecy it's referring to actually is. But nonetheless, because it doesn't sound like Yonah in the book of Yonah is actually talking to Israel, so where his other prophecies hidden, that's a question that Chazal deal with. But nonetheless, we see that it's from Zivu, the tribal area of Zivu, and finally the Gemara says that maybe it's a combination. Maybe Imoi mi Asher va'aviv mi Zvulun. Maybe his mother was from Asher and his father was from Zvulun. But nonetheless, we do seem to have context for who he was in Tanakh. At least we certainly know the time frame is the later time, the later period during the first temple reign towards the end. Okay, now let's move on to the next section. One thing that's worthwhile thinking about when looking at this book is this book seems to be primarily a prophecy to the other nations. Is this too unique to Yonah? And the truth is, it is not. In fact, when learning through the other Nevi'im Achronim, you'll notice that Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel designate numerous prakim, together tens and tens of prakim, to their prophecies to the nations around them. So this is not unique to Yonah. In fact, even his contemporaries, Eliyahu, his teacher, went to Midbar Damesek, went to Damascus in Melachim Aleph Perek Yotes, and Elisha went to Damesek too in Melachim Beis Perek Ches. So we see that other Nevi'im, in fact, went to the courts of foreign kings around, and so this is the same thing that Yonah is doing. He's going to the court of Nineveh. So it is not unusual. However, one of the things which is a question is that although it's true that going to prophesy to other kings is not unusual, it seems funny that the only thing which we have of Yonah is this. Meaning, we know Eliyahu and Elisha's other prophecies. We know the numerous other prakim of Yeshayahu, of Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel. Why is it that we have included in Tanakh one book which is only and predominantly dealing with the prophecy of Yonah to Nineveh, to the Assyrian king, when there doesn't seem to be any connection whatsoever to Israel? And this is the question that Radak asks in his introduction to the Sefer, and he gives a few answers. Option number one, he suggests, is it is Musar to the nation of Israel. This is in a certain sense rebuke to them. If the nation of Assyria will hear one word of rebuke from the prophet of God, and they turn around, they do an about face, one, two, three, how is it possible that you, Israel, who hear from prophet after prophet after prophet, keep ignoring them? So it's a rebuke to Israel. Another option, the Radak says, is to display the great miracles that Hashem did in order to save his Navi. Saving him from the fish, bringing the fish to the dry shore, all the different things that happened along the way to demonstrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's care for the Navi. But the third and perhaps the most intriguing of the options the Radak suggests is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show, by having this book as part of the 24 books of Tanakh, is to show that Hashem cares. That Hashem cares, Hashem Yisbarach, Chomel al Balei Tshuva. If you want to come back to Hashem, Hashem loves you. There's no one who's too far away. You can always come back. Even this nation, this nation which is going to inflict terrible ill on Israel, on the northern kingdom, Hashem will still say, if they do Teshuva, I still welcome them back. And in fact, this explains why it is that the book of Yonah is deeply connected to two halachic practices. One is that the book of Yonah is read as the Haftarah on the afternoon of Yom Kippur, no less. So it is a paradigm of what it means to do teshuva, to come back. And also, if you look at the Mishnayos in the beginning of the second perek of Meseches Ta'anis, when they performed a public fast day for some ill that was going on in society, the elders would use the psukim in Sefer Yonah to demonstrate that not Hashem is not looking for our outer expression of teshuva, but rather our inner movement towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Yonah functions primarily as a tool of teshuva. One or two other options that do exist as to why we need to know the Sefer, and that is the Da'at Mikra, in his introduction to this Sefer, quotes a later academic who says that maybe one of the points of the Sefer is also to show that Hashem has many agents. Harbei shluchim lamakom. There are many agents to Hashem. So in this Sefer demonstrates the weather, the storm, the fish, the worm, the tree. All these are ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates and controls the world. The last point just to focus on when thinking about the Sefer is, did it really happen? And you may say, well, of course it happened. We all see the pictures of Yonah and the whale, and we've grown up with it in something which is a normal part of our growing up, knowing about Yonah. Well, Rav Yosef Ibn Kaspi, a famous commentator on Tanakh, points out that yes, it certainly did happen, but he quotes a Yesh Omrim, he quotes a dissenting opinion that maybe the first two chapters were actually a dream. This whole business with the fish, this whole business about the boat was a dream, and then when he's waking up from this, he realizes that, and that's when he actually goes to Nineveh. This does not seem to be generally adopted, but it does seem in line with some of the Rambam's general perspectives on Tanakh, that sometimes the more wonderful, or we'll call it mystical sounding visions, really were actually really only visions, and they did not happen. Which leads us to the last and most intriguing aspect of this, and that is famously, the Vilna Gaon has a very unique perspective. The Gra, Rav Eliyahu Vilna, has a perspective about the Sefer that is not as it seems at all. The reason why it's included in Tanakh is not because of a political episode, not because of a Tshuva episode. The Vilna Gaon understands that there's a remez, there's an additional layer of meaning to the story, may not actually negate the physical meaning of what actually occurred, but the reason it may be included is because there's a symbolic description over here of the journey of the soul. In fact, there's a book called The Journey of the Soul, the Vilna Gaon's understanding of Sefer Yonah. It's in and of itself is an incredible Sefer, just to appreciate what's really going on over here. And it talks about how people, souls, they get caught up in materialism, die, go through a process of Gehinnom, of churning, where there is the sort of the wail through the grave, and then they are spat out back onto life as another soul. The process of Gilgul, of reincarnation. So there seems to be a much more metaphysical level to the Sefer. So when we engage and we learn the Sefer, let's appreciate, on the one hand, yes, we were looking at a linear timeline. We're looking at something which is we can point to and understand and try to take apart. But at the same time, we also need to realize that there's numerous layers of frequency which are being conveyed to us at numerous levels of Pshat, Remez, Drusha, and Sod of meaning to this. In the meantime, this leaves us in an excellent position to actually start the Sefer. Looking forward to with you tomorrow. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.